We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 283. Oh, boy, Scott. So we recorded last Sunday, and we were hoping the worst case scenario did not happen, and unfortunately it did, and the Red Sox won, and then they decided to rub it in our faces. So it's been that kind of week for us and Yankees fans.
Yeah, I forgot that until you just said that. I didn't realize that the final game was that night. So that's pretty brutal. The Red Sox won the World Series, and there's nothing we could do about it. It's done. It's over with, and now we move on to spring training and looking at everything else. And F the Red Sox. And I kind of like all the things that they're saying, to tell you the truth, because it just adds more to rivalry. And I like the rivalry. It's more fun when these teams don't like each other. So I appreciate everybody on the Red Sox side trolling the Yankees, because it just adds fuel to the fire.
Someone said on Twitter, they tagged me in a tweet, and it was the video the next morning of them playing New York, New York in the clubhouse. And then with what Alex Cora did at the parade, saying we scored 16 runs at Yankee Stadium, suck on that. Yeah. They are obsessed with rubbing this in the Yankees' face. And as much as it sucks that the Red Sox won the World Series, that actually softens the blow a little bit, because I know the Yankees have real estate in the Red Sox brains. They made it a priority to troll the Yankees after they won the World Series. You'd think they would just be concerned with winning a championship. No, they had to stick it to the Yankees because they cannot take their eyes off the pinstripes.
Yeah, that's fine. It does make it a little bit better. I mean, it still happened, so you know, it doesn't really change.
Trying to make myself feel better, man.
The Cora thing, it was a little overblown, his comment, because it was more direct. If you listen to the whole quote and the context of it, it was actually more directed towards like Boston writers or Boston fans, because him talking about people who counted them out, whatever. I like the narrative. I like the fact that everybody just grabbed that one quote and we take it personally. So that's good.
Absolutely.
I think the fact that they put New York in the clubhouse afterwards is, it's an amazing troll job, but why? That's the question I have. Like, the fact that they're still doing it, that they are still hung up on them.
It was 2+ weeks after they beat the Yankees in the ALDS. I understood it after they beat the Yankees in the division series.
Yeah, it makes sense then.
But once you moved on, you beat Houston and then you beat Los Angeles, and you're still doing it. I think
it just proves how much these two cities and the rivalry, even when the teams and the players are different, it's still there, and they know that they're up against the Yankees, and that's their biggest rival, no matter what, no matter who they're playing, no matter what series they're in. At the end of the day, when the calendar turns to the next day, it's the Yankees and the Red Sox, and I think they realize that, and so they had to give us a little bit of love, and I hope the Yankees shove it in their faces.
You think Aaron Judge regrets doing that?
No, I think he likes it. I think he likes poking the bear, even though it didn't work out this time. I do.
He's never done that, though.
I think quietly, I think he does. I think in the back, he certainly doesn't regret it. I don't think. I would see
he would do it again.
I don't think he would do it again in public. Not at this point. I think he would do it after some victories. But I think he's, you know, he made his move. He did it. You know, doing it again, probably not, especially after they just won the World Series.
So if the Yankees,
it wouldn't really work.
You think if the Yankees beat the Red Sox in the playoffs next year or win the World Series, we hear Sweet Caroline or Dirty Water or whatever the frick they play up at Fenway Park?
I hope not. I really don't want to hear any of those songs associated with any kind of a
Yankees
victory.
You don't want the Yankees to be thinking about the Red Sox when they're hoisting
I don't want to be thinking about the Red Sox. I don't want to be hearing those songs when I'm celebrating a victory. I want to play my songs. I don't want to hear any of the. I certainly don't want to hear Sweet Caroline. I can tell you that much. And I definitely don't want to hear the Dirty Water song. These are two songs that I do not want to hear. So if I'm a Red Sox fan, like, I don't want to hear New York, New York either. I would rather hear my songs.
I don't know. Red Sox fans were loving it. They were. Yeah. They did not hesitate tag us in those tweets.
That's fine.
I get it. For the fans' perspective, it's great.
That's fine. You know, they, The fans are where the rivalry obviously starts, with everybody trolling each other and going back and forth. So it's all good. I like it. I like the fact that it's happening when we're not even around. It makes me feel, it puts a little smile on my face because I enjoy the hate.
So you don't think Judge lost any sleep over this? What about you?
No, I
don't.
Did
you lose any sleep over this?
Not really, because I think I'd already accepted it.
Or is it because you have a Sleep Number bed?
A little bit of both. It was a good number of sleep, actually.
We all know sleep is important, but consider someone you know who is in the military or a Vietnam or a veteran. Sorry, I don't know where I got Vietnam there. Or a veteran. Imagine how much a good night's sleep means to them. From military heroes to everyday heroes, the new Sleep Number 360 smart bed helps everyone get the proven quality sleep that will change their life. Many couples disagree on mattress firmness, but Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side so you get just the right fit for both of you. Scott, what can our listeners do if they want one of these Sleep Number beds?
Well, first of all, I can tell you that it is extremely important to have the ideal firmness on your side of the bed, because you don't want to be messing around with if your girlfriend or wife or whomever has something that's a little bit different. You don't want to deal with that. Why do you have to use the same type of bed that they want? Why don't you just get your own stuff? That's why you got to go to Sleep Number. You got to come in during the Veterans Day sale and save $400 on a queen Sleep Number 360 C4 bed. It's a smart bed. Now it's only $1,299, plus there's exclusive savings reserved for military and veterans. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx and find one nearest you.
So the big news this week, Brett Gardner is coming back to the Yankees 2019, even though both you and I did not want to bring him back in our GM plans. They bought him out of that $12.5 million option, which we thought was going to happen, and they reached a deal worth $7.5 million. So $9.5 million when you add the buyout plus the new deal for next year, which saves the Yankees $3 million for next season. And it's also, I think, important to note that the buyout does not count against this year's luxury tax. It counts against last year's. It's actually, I've read that it's spread across the entire years of the contract because it's really on the total value of the contract that he signed 4 years ago. It does not affect their luxury tax number from last year. Does not affect their luxury tax number from this year. It's not going to push them over anything.
Right. Yeah. And that's the beauty of those. It really doesn't affect anything. And that's, I guess that's why they had to do it. It was, they were able to save more money on this year too. Look, you know, I thought it was a possibility that they were going to, one, I definitely thought they were going to not accept that contract because it was too much, I think, for what they were getting with Brett Gardner at this point. And I didn't think it was out of the question. I didn't put it in my plans because it's something that I wouldn't have done. I think there's better options out there. And now the fact that Brett Gardner is there, look, I'm glad he's back. I like Brett Gardner. I think he's still a very valuable player. I think he's a good player. I think he's a veteran leader in this team. I think he does a lot of very good things still. There's no doubt about it. I just don't think he's getting to a point where he's not going to be an everyday starter all the time anymore. And especially later in the season when you see him break down, because it's happening, it seems like year after year now. And another year older, when you're looking at a guy who relies so heavily on their legs, this is what happens towards the end of their careers. Like they do start to fall off a cliff. We've seen it many times before. And speaking of falling off cliffs, there's another big situation now because Brett Gardner is 1,000% back, signed, done. Now we have a redundant player potentially with this, with the man that nobody wants to talk about, but the contract's still in the books. Does this mean that Ellsbury is never coming back, or are we going to have redundancy again? It'll be interesting.
The Gardner re-signing there's two aspects to it. Number one, like you just said, is what does that mean for the rest of the outfielders? And the second is, how much does he play? And I think he could actually play a better role next year than he played this year, assuming players are healthy. So last year he had to play every day, and we saw him fall off that cliff. In the first half, he slashed .254, .345, .403 with a .106 WRC+. That was better than your average player. In the second half, 209, 288, 316, 66 WRC+. Much worse than your average player. The more he played, the worse he got. So next year, if he's only the fourth outfielder and he only has to play 110 games or 100 games, maybe he can sustain that good play that we saw in the first half for the entire season. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is what happens to the rest of the guys. We want Clint Frazier to play. What happens to Clint Frazier? We want Stanton to get time in the outfield where he can play right field. He can play left field because that opens up the DH spot that allows more versatility. Now you have to add another piece to this equation with Gardner. And Ellsbury is who the hell knows. I said in my plans I would rely on Ellsbury to do what they're probably going to rely on Gardner to do next year. So maybe they do just pay Ellsbury to go away. Maybe they fudge some bullshit injury again to make him just be on the sidelines all year. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, it just looks to me more and more the fact that they brought him back is just supporting the fact that I think that they're done with Ellsbury. I just don't see how you could bring him back onto this team. He's blocking people at this point. Now that you have Gardner back, they're a redundant player. Plus you don't know what you're getting from Ellsbury at all. The man didn't play baseball for an entire year. That's a big deal. So I just don't see how you could possibly bring him back onto this roster and feel good about your roster and say that, yeah, we've done everything we can to make this team better and to compete for a championship next year. When we know what is going to be happening in Boston, like their position players, they're staying pretty damn close to the same. These guys are coming back and they're going to be just as good. And we're bringing back Ellsbury as a roster spot where they could have gone out and made the team better. I just don't see it happening. If he does do that, and that's a real possibility, they got some serious questions to ask, because why would you bring back Gardner if you were planning on, you know, bringing in Ellsbury as part of the team? It doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense, especially if Frazier is planning on being in the equation. Because don't see how they can fit that many outfielders into a roster. You can't.
They're certainly not saying that they're not going to use Frazier at all. Like, they're hopeful that he's back. I mean,
you can't
rely on it.
You can't use all of them, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm agreeing with you. If that's my point is if they're actually saying that, that's a bunch of horse shit. Because Frazier is absolutely there and in the plans, and they have already they've already talked about him being them expecting him to be ready to go for spring training. Like, that is their full expectation right now. So if you're bringing Ellsbury back and you're bringing him part of this team, that outfield is insanely crowded. And yep, Gardner could do everything Ellsbury can do, everything, and vice versa. So I mean, I would say that Gardner plays left field much better than Ellsbury, but Gardner could play center.
They're redundant players from day one. That's why it was a dumbass contract for Ellsbury.
Yeah,
but
Ellsbury
had
pop. Ellsbury hit like 97
home runs. He had that 30 home run year, but that I'm sure Scott Boras had nothing to do with.
Right.
I'm sure his minions were not slipping anything in Ellsbury's pregame shakes, but. But do you think that this part of this is that Cashman, when he just wanted some insurance with Gardner, and he got him for a little bit cheaper than he was going to have to pay him anyway, the $3 million is saved, and he just now this is insurance for the outfield next year.
I guess it's something. I don't know. It looked like they were going to go. I still think that they need to improve. They needed to add a bat that brings something different to this lineup. And you're bringing back Brett Gardner. Now you literally have the same outfield. So you really, at this point, now you need Frazier to be healthy because now he's your right-handed bat. And if you're going to do any kind of a platoon or anything like that, even if Ellsbury were there, which wouldn't make sense because how are you going to fit both Frazier and Ellsbury there? But Frazier's your right-handed bat. So maybe they're relying on that, but to me, then where's your insurance? Because you're not bringing anybody else at that point.
So let me ask you this question, and I think by the way you've been talking, I think I know your answer. Does bringing back Gardner solve a problem or create a problem?
It creates problems.
Yeah,
it absolutely
does.
I
agree with you, and it's not that I dislike Brett Gardner. I like Brett Gardner,
It's what the player is right now. I mean, take his name out of the equation.
But what you need for 2019 on this team is not Brett Gardner.
You know what's funny is that part of the reason I thought that maybe at some point they're going to bring Brett Gardner back because of like the fact that he's the longest tenured Yankee. They want to keep him as a Yankee and all these things, right? Well, and Gardner talked about playing 4 more years when he was talking with CC.
That was after last year where he finished much stronger last year than he did this year.
But it's still, he was talking about 4 more years. And so if the Yankees, if Gardner, let's theoretically wants to play another 2 to 3 years, he's going somewhere else anyway. He's not, if they were to bring him back after this year, it would be very surprising considering it's a 1 year deal. And with all of the, you know, what's in the minor leagues at this point, it was surprising to me that they even brought him back this year, honestly. So I'm wondering what the plan is here in the outfield, unless it's, you know, we're going all in now on Clint Frazier being healthy.
And it might only be a couple of million dollars, but do you think the Yankees overpaid Brett Gardner with the 7.5? If they just bought him out for the $2 million, what, and another team signed him, what would they have signed him for?
I'd say about that. I mean, Hechavarria got how much last year?
It's 5.9, but
yeah, I'd say Brett Gardner
about five or six.
There's a piece of him that's still, you know, the fact of what he's done in his career and the you know, the grittiness of a player, and he's still a damn good outfielder. So I think he would get that somewhere else as well.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised, but I was. It raises more questions than it does solve answers for me for going into next year, which is going to be interesting because now a lot of people are also saying this takes them out of the running for Harper. I don't think they were really in the running for Harper anyway, but unless some piece on this team moves, then you can certainly say they're not going to be in on Harper.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were going to be in on Harper in the first place, but the it's just, you know, when you're looking at the amount of guys in this outfield, and now you add Brett Gardner back to the team, and he's when you're looking at the contract though, and if that's what takes, if that's what people think takes the Yankees out of Harper, like don't think that.
It's not the money. It's the player. It's the player.
Right.
It's the roster spot.
There's still a lot of things that can happen here, right? Like there absolutely are things that can happen. Cashman may find somebody that's still in love with Clint Frazier and is confident that he's going to be back. And who knows? There could be a deal moving Clint Frazier, and there's still another outfield spot.
But
Ellsbury,
I think,
could retire. Who knows? They could get a settlement and just agree.
I would hope that Ellsbury retires. That means they're out of that money.
Well, I'm saying there would be some kind of a settlement. There wouldn't be just this flat out.
Let's be honest. The only way that the Yankees are in on Harper is if Stanton's not on this team next year.
Yeah, I mean, probably, and I don't see how that's a possibility.
Definitely.
I don't personally think the Yankees are going to spend that much money on another player for 10 years plus.
Well, it wouldn't be another player, because if you trade Stanton, I'm assuming that team would be taking the money, or else what's the point of trading Stanton?
No, I'm talking about with Stanton. I'm saying it's not a reality having two guys at this point making that much money for that long of a time when you have all of these guys on the horizon that are going to need new contracts very soon. Just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and Hal Steinbrenner talked to Joel Sherman. There was an article where he was quoted a bunch of different times talking about some different topics. One of them was about those long-term contracts, and he said, we are not afraid of 10-year contracts. Just look at what we agreed to take on for Stanton last year. So he still believes, Steinbrenner does, you can build a winner for under $200 million. But he also said if us going over $200 million to win a championship is necessary, I will do it.
Yeah, so he said nothing. So he talked out of both
sides
of his mouth.
He said exactly what everybody knew he was going to say. He's not. If he had said, I will not spend over $200 million, there would be a riot.
Look, if they identify a situation where they find a player and they think the return is a valuable return for the New York Yankees and has a much better opportunity and puts them over the top to win a World Series, then they'll make the move. The Yankees make more money if the Yankees win a World Series. No doubt about it. It doesn't matter how big their payroll is. When you win a World Series, the amount of money that comes to your team is insane through marketing and like the amount of other things that happen. The amount of money that gets sent, like the Red Sox right now are just rolling in cash.
Like, exactly. Do you think the Red Sox are upset about spending $230 million? No.
No, championships bring ridiculous amount of money. So they will spend the money if they believe that it's going to put them over the top. But it's got to be the right move. It's got to be the right player. And they've got to be, you know, they've got to be right saying that this guy does put us over the top. And when I'm looking at the offense and I'm looking at the guys that everybody's talking about, Machado and Harper, unless something is different with the guys that are currently on the team, I don't see how that makes us that much better to be in position for a championship, personally. I think that the pitching side still needs a ridiculous amount of work, and that's where you're going to get a much higher percentage chance of winning a World Series.
Yeah, and we had been saying for a couple of years that the Yankees are eyeing this free agent class to get under the luxury tax so they can be in on guys like Harper and Machado, but that was 2016. That was before the emergence of Sanchez and Aaron Judge and Andujar and Gleyber Torres. Like, I mean, Gleyber Torres wasn't even on the Yankees when we were talking about that. So things have changed. The position player outlook on this team has changed, and the needs on this team have changed. So you can't just say that, oh, the Yankees are under the luxury tax for a reason, and that's for Harper or for Machado, because that's not the reality anymore.
Well, and it's you know, they, again, people, I think, sometimes get confused about the luxury tax situation. Like, the reason they did it was so that it would reset and it will help them not only this year but into the future. It's a number that, you know, will be less for the Yankees moving forward as well. There's the penalty won't be as great, so it helps them out not just this year but moving forward as well. And if they can keep you know, relatively managed payroll, then they can identify players that help them for their particular needs. And when you're looking at those guys, that's just, to me, that's not the need. That's not the need at all. So if they identify areas where they can go out and spend more money on pitching, then great. Then they can use this, the fact that they got under the luxury tax and they're saving all this money on the penalty, and apply it to some pitching, whether it's, you know, acquisition through trade and they take on a contract, which, you know, we'll talk about in a little bit with the possibility of Cleveland saying, hey, you know, we're open for business, basically. You know, there are other avenues to go to acquire things that you need for your team than free agency. If we don't see it on the free agent market, that doesn't mean it's not available. I mean, look what happened last year with Stanton. Look what the Red Sox did with Sale. Like, there are opportunities to make trades.
But Steinbrenner, the way he talks, he said that he believes you can build a winner for under $200 million. So the luxury tax just happens to be around $200 million. It was $197 last year. It's going to be like $205 next year. So that $200 number, I don't think, is just pulled out of thin air.
No.
He's saying under $200 million talking about the luxury tax. You agree?
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
Right.
It's certainly on their mind.
And I believe him when he says, I think we had a championship caliber team this year for under $200 million. I believe you can build a sustainable winner for under $200 million. So it's not like just something that I think if it were up to him, he would.
I believe that he's trying to do that, that he thinks that that's possible.
It is possible.
I certainly believe that.
It is possible.
Oh, I think it's possible too.
You don't have to spend what the Red Sox spent to win. I mean, it helps, but you don't have to. I mean, look at the Astros last year. They won last year and they didn't spend over $200 million. And I agree with Steinbrenner. The Yankees had enough talent on this team to win a championship. They just didn't play well. I don't think it was the best possible team they could have built, but I think it was good enough if things went well, and they didn't go well.
No, there were things did not work out well as far as injuries, as far as guys playing well at the right times, and, you know, just overall play was just not good at the end of the season. And that's the reason.
And that's
the
not,
talent on this
has
team
nothing
was
to
good.
Do with how much money they spent, right? Because if they had spent $120 million, it wouldn't have changed the fact that they couldn't hit with runners in scoring position. Right.
I totally agree. I just don't think that this $200 million, I think it's, we're just looking at this number as a target. And I think that's what they're looking at. It's a target. It's an over-under. They would like to be there, but if a nice shiny object comes into their view and they think it's going to help them, they will go after it with no questions. Not a big deal. So again, it's just really a target, in my opinion. I think that's what he's referring to. Like, yeah, he thinks he can do it. especially now with all of their, you know, cheap contracts and young talent, now is the time you can certainly do it. But it, you know, again, they're not going to pass up something that, that they believe will help this team and put them over the edge.
And maybe Harper and Machado are those. Maybe they're not. Steinbrenner kind of talked about Machado. He was asked about some of the lack of hustle, dirty plays that Machado portrayed, displayed during the playoffs. And he said that kind of stuff, regardless of who the player is in any trade or free agent acquisition, these are questions we're asking. The analytics, the pro scouting are always taking temperature, personality, motivation, how good a teammate someone is. Do they understand what is expected of them by the New York Yankees and by the fans of New York City? It does matter, and it will be no different this year. So he may have said a lot of nothing, or he may have said that what Machado did in the playoffs rubbed him the wrong way, and they don't feel good about potentially giving him $300 million.
So when they take his temperature, are they taking it like up his ass?
Under the tongue. Under the tongue? Yeah.
Be
civilized.
I have a 1 year old. We don't do it under the tongue. They're looking at all these things. What's that?
Up the poop chute.
That's the only way to get it. Actually, in the ear is another way. But the they're going to look at temperament of the player as well. They're going to look at all of these things. They're making sure that the player is going to fit in New York. I mean, look what happened this past year with Sonny Gray. Obviously, it didn't work out. Obviously, they found a guy that didn't work in New York. This has happened in the past. So they're going to look at all of these things. I don't think that what was said or what was done by Manny Machado really changed much in their eyes on how they feel about the player, though. I think a lot of that was blown out of proportion to make him a villain for some reason to somebody, and I don't think he's that guy.
I disagree. I think because a lot of... big part of these mega contracts are fan perception and how the fans will react to you giving a player 10 years or 8 years at $200+ million. And if they're not going to be happy with that, then I don't think teams are going to be willing to spend it.
I definitely don't agree with this. Okay. So you're telling me that I don't think that they consider what fans are going to think of contracts when they sign them personally. I don't think that even goes into the equation. I think if they bring in Manny Machado, there's going to be a buzz and an excitement because they're bringing in a very good player and they're still going to pack the stadium. That's all they're concerned about. They're going to sell gear. They're going to sell Machado jerseys. That will happen. So I'm not really thinking the fact like they're taking into consideration what we all think based on, you know, how are the fans going to react to us in 8 years? Like, I don't think that's really much of a... They're focusing on the fact that if they bring in Machado now and it's a long-term contract, can we win one, maybe two World Series? Because then it doesn't matter. That's to me what they're looking at.
But when you sign a player for a decade and then that player goes out and doesn't hustle or does something that's quote-unquote dirty, whether that's spiking the first baseman or stealing signs, which I don't think is dirty, but some people may consider dirty, and then that causes him to be on the back of the New York Post, and fans are flipping out about it. I don't think that's something that any ownership would want.
Right, but I think that everything that happened with Machado, I don't think he's that guy. I think a lot of that stuff was overblown. So
overblown by who?
He said everybody.
I'm not Johnny Hustle. He said those words.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean he doesn't... he's talking about, I'm not the Johnny Hustle guy. Like, to me, like, the Johnny Hustle guy is like the guy that like steamrolls it around the bases too. Even
like
for home runs.
Brett Gardner diving,
like, you know,
first
he's not Brett Gardner. He's not that guy. He's still a guy that goes out there and plays hard. He does all of those things. So I think a lot of it was just taken a little bit out of context. I think I've never ever seen him as a player who doesn't work hard. Like, I've never thought that about Manny Machado. This year is the first year. We talked about this before. This year was the first year where any of these negative things about Machado have really come into play.
It was the first time talking about spotlight.
That's not true. I mean, the Orioles were in the playoffs a decent amount. Like, they had some good teams. He played hard and made some ridiculous plays at third base. Like, I don't see him as a dirty guy either. That the play at first base was whatever. It was weird. The I just don't see him as a dirty guy. So I don't think that they're thinking that he's a dirty guy in that sense. What I'm saying is I think everything that happened in this postseason doesn't matter. I think they already have a perception of the player, and I don't really think that's changed much. I think they have to say a lot of the stuff to the media.
Do you think a player can help his free agent case in the playoffs, but maybe not hurt it?
I mean, look what happened to Yu Darvish, man. He got that, what, six-year, $150 million contract after he sucked with the Dodgers last year and has been injured for, it seems like, forever. And then he goes to the Cubs with this long contract, gets hurt again. I mean, he didn't really hurt himself. He got a massive contract in a year that nobody was getting contracts.
Exactly. Right. But there's going to be players like Nathan Eovaldi who absolutely helped himself.
Oh, for sure.
And whatever Eovaldi gets this offseason will be because of what he did in October, not because of how he pitched for the last year, plus before he had Tommy John surgery with the Yankees and whoever else.
No, they're going to see what happened when he pitched late in the season and how he pitched in the playoffs. And yeah, he's going to get paid because of that. There's no doubt about it.
So you can help yourself in the playoffs. So to your point, yes.
But I think you can hurt yourself depending on like who you are. You know what I mean? Like if you're not one of these top guys and you have a, I think you can hurt yourself. But as a Machado, when you have a past and you know how these guys you've put the time in, you've put a lot of stats down on paper, you've got the tape. They know who you are. I don't think you can hurt yourself then. It depends on the player.
So whatever Machado gets this offseason, it will be what he was going to get regardless.
I think so.
Yeah.
And you're saying without the haze, all the shade that's being thrown at him. You're talking about that specifically, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's going to matter at all.
Yeah. And we'll never know, right? Like, unless he gets significantly less than Harper, I don't think we'll ever know.
I'm sure some GMs will hear through the grapevines of people saying, oh, we were, you know, if it was a thing that, you know, we took him off our board type of deal. Like, we're no longer interested in going after him.
But there's only maybe five teams that would be in on him anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, who knows? But we probably will not find out. But I still don't think. Like, they see Machado as the player who he is. You know, that's him saying something stupid or him running down first base and, like, barely clipping a guy. It's not going to change anything.
Yeah. Some other news this week, because the qualifying offers were sent out, seven players received them. It's actually less than previous years, but that's partially due because of the market currently. Like, a player like Machado couldn't receive a qualifying offer because he was traded midseason. There were some rules put in place last year that will affect what draft pick compensation teams get for these guys. So a lot of different factors here, but the qualifying offer is $17.9 million.
It's a lot of money too.
They take it from the top guys, the average, the salary, which is getting out of control. So
yeah.
Corbin, Grundahl, Harper, Keuchel, Kimbrel, Pollock, and Ryu all got the qualifying offer. So if the Yankees sign Corbin, if they are in on Harper, I guess Keuchel you could consider in there too. Ryu, I don't know. They're going to have to give up a draft pick.
Yeah, and that's, you know, something that they don't like doing. I think that's, you know, I think this does change a little bit of Corbin's market too. I think that the fact that they do have to give a draft pick up now too, or whomever signs him, does play into the considerations of what he's going to get. But, he's probably certainly going to turn that down. Harper's obviously going to turn that down. Grandal might take that. Keuchel will probably turn it down. Kimbrel will turn it down. Pollock would be stupid if he didn't take that. And then Ryu, I would assume, would turn that down as well, because he's probably looking for a multi-year deal after, he put together a pretty good year. So it'll be interesting to see what these guys do, but, and to see how that affects, Corbin's market, because I mean, I think that's the one that's most close to us. Ryu wouldn't be, I wanted to put him in my GM plans. He was there in thought. Like, I had him, you know, I was hovering over him for a little bit, because I think he could be a good player for the Yankees, and I could see them being interested in him.
He's 31.
Yeah.
And something about a soft throwing lefty, I don't know, coming out of the National League scares me.
Yeah. He's you know, maybe that's I was gonna say, we have a soft throwing lefty that they're looking to bring back on a 1-year deal, possibly.
It's going to be a lot less than what Rio's going to get, though.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe they'll be happy with their soft throwing lefty over a guy like Ryu. See, now are they going to bring back? Now they're going to bring back CC on a 1 year deal. They got the Gardner on a 1 year. Let's just bring back the exact team, same team.
Do over. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, let's roll back. Do over.
Yeah. With maybe some guys not getting injured.
Hopefully, maybe not.
And some guys hitting over 200.
That would be nice, but batting average doesn't matter.
Like we established last week, it matters when it's under 200.
It matters when it's convenient. I got it.
Cleveland is now budget conscious, so they are not offering a qualifying offer to Brantley, Andrew Miller, Cody Allen. And there were reports, Buster only tweeted out, that faced with market constraints, the Indians will listen to trade offers for some of their veteran players this winter, including Kluber and Carrasco. And immediately, the antenna of every Yankees fan went up when they saw those names, Kluber and Carrasco. And they said, Let Brian Cashman get to work.
Absolutely. I mean, this changes the ball game here with the way the free agency is. Now we got a Corey Kluber possibility. I mean, let's add Kluber. Let's add Corbin. Boom. Done. there we go. That's, we just made our team so much better. I mean, I love it. I do think that he should be going after one of two of these guys. He should absolutely be having these talks. The freaking GM is Mike Chernoff, whose father owns CBS, who happens to be the radio, the flagship radio home of the New York Yankees. So can we make a deal?
I'm sure he's thinking about that when he might be trading with the Yankees. I'm sure he's thinking about what the Mike Francesa ratings will be in the afternoon.
No, no, this is absolutely.
Maybe he can get some
Brian
more
Cashman
app sales if they trade Kluber over here.
They don't care about Francesa. Cashman and Chernoff, you know, I'm sure they'll have a nice dinner together. They'll talk about this, and then Dad's gonna put some pressure on the kid. Let's make this happen. This is. I mean, they're from Jersey. You know, I don't know if he grew up a Yankees fan or a Mets fan or a Phillies fan or what, but let's make this happen. I feel like there's a lot of tight connections here. Kluber would be a great deal.
Kluber's 32. Next year he's going to make $17 million. Then he's got a couple team options, $17.5 million, and then $18 million. And Carrasco's 31. 9.75 million next year, and then a 9.5 team option for the year after that. So if you're trading for either of these guys, it's not a 1 year thing.
Right. Well, it could be. That's the beauty of these, both of these. And we were looking at this before, right? The buyout for Kluber's $1 million. And for Carrasco, it's around the same. It's a little less than that, but they're relatively reasonable buyouts as well. So if there were to be an injury or something like that, like you have a get out of jail free card, well, not free, for $1 million to get out of the contract. So it's really attractive, I think, for a team that's trading for these guys, because they're really under control for 3 years, you know, based on how the team feels about them, or Kluber. Yep. 2 years for Carrasco. I like the way that these deals are laid out, and you know,
but
they're both going to be playing for another contract.
It also makes you think, like, what the hell is Cleveland doing? Because they're going to coast to that division championship again next year. And I think we've
not if they don't have all the players.
No, but I'm saying if you bring back Kluber and Carrasco, and you have your if they could go next year with the exact same team and win that division by 10 games.
Yeah. Oh, they're by far the best team.
So you're just gonna punt on that?
Maybe they hear the Rocco Baldelli footsteps.
Yeah.
they're scared of what's going to happen in Minnesota. I mean, it's obvious that they're having money problems in Cleveland right now. I was kind of
like
joking about this.
Go for it.
I'm saying this is kind of a LeBron effect.
Blame LeBron James, baby.
Yeah,
I love
maybe the sports world in Cleveland now is taking a big hit that LeBron has left, and now people are just, you know, not really interested as much anymore, not spending as much money, and just kind of laissez-faire about things, and they gotta exit themselves, spend a little less money these days, not as much enthusiasm around Cleveland sports. So
but Baker
the Browns
Mayfield.
Certainly
Baker
aren't giving
Mania.
You much.
The Browns are back. They're going into overtime every week. I thought they're back.
They're close to being back. They're I mean, they beat the Jets. That's a given.
That does not mean you're back.
It's true. But no, you know, this is good news, I think, for the Yankees, the fact that they are selling assets, because they have a lot of very good players. Also the fact that I'm surprised that they didn't offer qualifying offers to some of these guys, like Brantley. I'm surprised they didn't get one, because I think he would have turned it down. So I'm surprised there. Andrew Miller, I'm not surprised. I think Andrew Miller now has changed lanes in you know, the way that people look at him. He might be looking at a one-year deal with incentives at this point just to prove that he can stay healthy. So and he's an interesting player.
I was surprised at Cody Allen, but then I looked at his season. I'm pulling it up again. You know, Cody Allen had a 4.7 ERA this year.
I didn't know that, but I do remember him struggling quite a bit, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Then they brought in Brad Hand in during the season, and I guess they're just going to say Hand's our closer next year. But that Indians team could look a whole lot different. And if the Indians go back to being mediocre, well, then it's a three-team race. It's the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Astros, and it's whoever the hell else.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see how they do this, and the fact that they're kind of open for business on some of these players. I mean, they're still insanely talented with young guys. Like, their core
Lindor
is not going
and Ramirez
anywhere.
Are still there. They're not going to trade those guys.
And those but are two MVP caliber players.
Hypothetical situation: you trade Corey Kluber away. That's saying we're not going to win in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, your pitching definitely takes a huge hit at that point.
He's been one of the best pitchers in baseball the last 4 years.
Maybe they're thinking Trevor Bauer took another big step this year, which he did, and that they're going to rely on
him. He's
going to
add another 1,000 RPMs on his spin rate.
Yeah, you know, take all the drones away from the guy, and hopefully that he can kind of fill into that spot. But I don't really know what their minor league system is, if they're expecting someone to come up. I'm not really sure. But I think this also puts them in a position to see what you got. You know what I mean? Like, what is everybody going to be offering? Cause you put the name Kluber out there and now he's the best pitcher on the market. And now you're in the driver's seat with trying to get, you know, with trying to get assets back for a guy like Corey Kluber or Carrasco. I mean, Carrasco is a very interesting guy too, because you're looking at him, also had a good season, 31 years old, and is controlled for 2 years now, with the second year being a team option at very reasonable, under $10 million, 9.75 and 9.5. Like, that's really enticing, and I bet they would get a nice little haul for that.
Yeah, and he pitched 192 innings this year and 200 innings the year before. So
yeah, so I think that you know maybe they trade one of two and not both. But floating both of them out there to see what the best option is for them.
See,
as far
I think
as what
if you're going to trade one, you trade both.
Maybe, but they're still in a position where they could win if you're trading just one.
Yes. And we have a couple mailbag questions about the Cleveland situation. We're going to get into that. But before we do, I just want to say, remind you guys to rate and review the podcast, wherever it is you listen, if it's on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever, give us a rating. If you've been listening for a long time, throw us those 5 stars, a nice written review. That really helps out. Scott and I enjoy reading them, but most importantly, they allow more people to see the show, listen to the show, which allows us to create more shows. Also, submit mailbag questions. We're going to be doing mailbags every episode throughout the offseason. BronxPinstripes.com/podcast. You can submit the mailbags there, or you can tweet us at Yankees Podcast. You can post them on Facebook in the Bronx Pinstripe Show Facebook group. First question is from Elijah Palmer. What kind of package would it take to get Kluber or another pitcher from the Indians? And do you think Cashman will go for it? And let's just read this next one too, from Onassis Cabrera @_Onac on Twitter. Would you guys give up Andujar for Kluber?
Weesh. This is so we're looking at what the hauls would possibly be for Kluber. And I was looking back, we were talking before we started recording, and just looking back to see how old Sale was when he got traded from the White Sox to the Red Sox. Because if you're looking at the caliber of player, I mean, I'd say that's a pretty good comp. Sale, we realized, was what, 3 years younger at the time of the trade.
He was 28 and Kluber's going to be
31.
32 next year.
Oh, 32. So 4 years difference. Yep. So when you're looking at talent, it's, you know, pretty close, but as far as years, it's, obviously Kluber's older, but he is, you know, controlled for 3 years at decent money. So it's going to be a big haul. And you're looking at what the Red Sox gave up. They gave up their number one prospect in Makata.
Not just their number one, the number one in baseball.
In baseball. Yeah. And then the pitching prospect, their number one pitching prospect too. The kid that was throwing 105 miles per hour, or whatever it was, he was trying to be the hardest throwing jackass in baseball, I guess, because it's not working well for
him. I'm looking up his name right now, because Michael Kopech.
Yeah. What was he saying? He was like throwing, he wanted to throw 109 or something stupid. It was like a circus act. Whatever. He's not healthy. It's shocking. His arm
yeah,
his
I arm think problems. He's got some elbow issues. Weird.
Yeah. Would I give up Andujar for Kluber? Yes, I would.
Yes.
I would give up Andujar for Kluber because I think they could fill third base. At that point, when you're looking at that, then all of a sudden Manny Machado does make sense. But Corey Kluber is a difference maker. I mean, a big time difference maker on a team that I think is already very good, that has an offense that can do things. You add Corey Kluber to the rotation of the Yankees and it changes a lot of things, I think.
And I don't think it would just take Andujar. I think you're talking about Andujar plus some other prospects. Maybe Clint Frazier. Maybe the Indians want Clint Frazier back in their system. But you're not going to get him for just Andujar. And also the Indians have Jose Ramirez, right?
So yeah. He can play multiple positions too.
They don't need a third baseman. But what I'm saying is if they see Andujar,
they might not see Andujar as a third baseman.
Right. They might see him as a first baseman or even a DH or an outfielder. But yeah. They might say, no, we don't want Andujar. We want Gleyber Torres or we want Sheffield plus. Actually, Sheffield's from the Indians too.
From
right?
there, yeah, as well. So they have two Yankees have two players that they know very well. It would be some shit right there if Sheffield got traded back to them in a Kluber deal. I'd do that in a second. But it's going to take obviously a very high prospect. I mean, Mateo would be floated into this as well. He's back playing again in the Arizona Fall League. So you know, include his name in there. Definitely include. Pretty much any level of prospect from the Yankees, they're going to ask for the moon for Corey Kluber, but it might be worth it.
Yeah, and I think like you said, he's the difference maker that they're looking for.
He's a guy that's even when he's not right, can pitch and get you through seven innings. Like he's that type of guy, and I love those guys. Like he is a true ace to me. He's a horse. He goes out there. And will give you, he'll give you good innings.
Any concerns about his rocky postseason? Roughed up in his last three postseason starts.
Yeah,
two of them against the Yankees, and then one this year against the Astros.
Yeah, I was going to say the Yankees are the ones that did it, the majority of the damage. But no, I don't think I'm putting too much stock into it. But because we've seen him pitch well.
But we've also seen guys who have had no postseason history go on to be one of the key difference makers in the Red Sox winning a World Series.
Talking about Nathan Eovaldi here.
Yeah, definitely not talking about the guy that we openly mocked when he gave up the game two home run to Aaron Judge, and then he turned his entire life around.
You know, Nathan Eovaldi's a free agent.
Yeah, no thanks.
If you haven't noticed that,
maybe there's
a reunion that's coming back.
That has never worked for the Yankees, bringing a guy back for the second time.
So they're due? Yeah. I mean, he wasn't bad the first time. It wasn't terrible.
Neither was Javier Vasquez.
I'd say it was pretty good.
Vasquez wasn't bad the first time.
Yeah. Eovaldi is a different story than Vasquez. Eovaldi has a robot arm now, so it's a different story.
That's true. There's no human left in that right arm.
Exactly.
John says, after seeing D-Rob's statement on representing himself in free agency, do you think he'd still take a hometown discount to stay in New York? So I said he would take a hometown discount because he fired his agent. And then he put that statement on MLB Trade Rumors, basically saying, I know what I want. I think I have a good perception on what my market value is. I want to represent myself at this point in my life.
Yeah.
I don't think he would take a hometown discount.
Yeah, I think he would be losing a lot of money if he came back to the Yankees for what he could get somewhere else. I think that
I said like 1 year, $9 million.
Yes, yeah, I think it's going to take way more than that. Plus, I think he's going to get a 3 year deal, 2 to 3 year deal with maybe a third year as an option, but. I think he's going to get more money than that too. I don't know. I think that at this point, he, like he said, he wrote that article on MLB Trade Rumors, and he said basically that he's writing his own articles now too. He's his own press team. He's his own agent. He's his own guy. He runs. He and his wife run the nonprofit High Sox, High Hopes for High Sox, or High Sox for High Hopes,
High
something
Sox
like that.
For hope.
They do everything. They're just a machine over there, the Robinson family. You know, he's obviously going to go out there and trying to prove himself right. Right. I mean, like he's going to go out there with the intent to try to get as much money as he possibly can to put himself in a position that he can and prove the fact that this worked, that he can, you know, represent himself.
Well,
I feel like he's also got that now.
Usually when a player fires his agent, it's because he knows he's going to be signing his last contract and he's more concerned with where he plays than how much he plays for. But that doesn't sound like the case after reading that. So fine. I was wrong about that. Like, I still think the Yankees should be interested in bringing him back.
No, I just don't think. I think if the money's going to be too much. That's the problem. Or the years, I think, is the problem. I think the years are the problem for the Yankees.
Let some other team overextend themselves then.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's a guy that's going to be good, I think, for another 2 to 3 years. I think that he's definitely got that. Yeah. So 35, 36, I think he could definitely pitch. You see relievers go that way all the time. He could be a junk baller at the end of his career, big time.
And he's been mostly healthy.
Yeah, and he's been good. And really haven't really had, you know, much of a fall off.
No, I thought he was good this year.
Yeah, I think so too. And he's reliable. He's one of those guys that you can depend upon.
Damian Foxton says, "What is your take on using pine tar to increase spin rate? Are some teams, Boston, Houston, doing it better than others? If the MLB aren't really if MLB is not really going to police it, should the Yankees be better at exploiting it?"
So we're talking about spin rate, and we're saying, so now we're assuming that the Astros are using pine tar to increase the spin rate. That's what these guys are doing.
That's what
and
Trevor
how,
Bauer said.
Yeah, so that I'm just prefacing this this little discussion with assumptions here. So I do think that a lot of teams use it. I think a lot of players do use it, and I don't think anybody cares. They've flat out asked some of these guys, some of the offensive players, "Do you care if these guys are using pine tar to get a better grip on the ball?" And the majority of the time, these guys are like, "No, I don't care. I would rather them have control of the ball and not hit me in the head, especially when it's cold outside. If it is a little bit of an agent to get them a better grip on the ball so that they're not throwing lasers at our heads or at the rest of our body, then fine. They don't care. They just don't care." And I think that's probably the same sentiment you get from the majority of major leaguers.
Yeah, but that's different than using it to, I don't want to say cheat, but using it to gain an advantage, right?
Well, that's what they're doing. They're using it to gain an advantage.
But when the players talk about it, they say, "Well, if 36 degrees outside and the player needs to get a better grip on the ball, fine."
The argument there is that why can a player use pine tar on their bat to get a better grip on the bat if the pitcher can't get a better grip on the ball? Okay. That's part of the argument. I've heard it before on other things. And, you know, if you're going to fight that argument, it's, well, if you add more grip to the ball and it's stickier, then you can increase the spin rate. You can put the ball, you know, where you want it. And at that point, when you know what's coming and the batter doesn't, there's a huge advantage on the pitcher side.
Well, the spin rate, I think, is a big thing. I feel like spin rate exploded this year, at least as far as common knowledge of what spin rate does and how it makes pitchers better. Right? Like we didn't talk about spin rate 2 years ago.
I mean, I think all of these, I think we're seeing new stats and things like that all
right,
the time.
Right, but now we know that if your fastball is spinning faster, it means you're going to be better. 99 miles an hour at average spin rate will get hit. 96 miles an hour at increased spin rate will not get hit.
I think it's being talked about now, but I think a lot of the scouting departments, a lot of them,
sure,
they all had this stuff.
I'm sure
they knew it.
I'm sure they knew about that. And I'm sure they discussed it. But now we know it as fans, as casual fans, and whatever, people watching at home, sitting at home, drinking beer, watching the game, they know about spin rate now.
Right. So now we're all looking for pine tar.
Where do you even buy pine tar?
You know, just go down to the store and get some pine tar.
Sports Authority?
Go down to your general store. Does Sports Authority even in business anymore?
I might do some tests with pine tar.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. My elbow will be blown. Doesn't matter what's on my fingers. It doesn't matter at all. Three pitches, gone.
I need something to calculate the spin rate. That's going to be the difficult part.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll be and to see that there's any kind of accuracy, I don't even know how you would do this.
I'm gonna ask Leanne to just slow-mo it and then
just count it.
Try and count the rotations.
you could do it on an Apple phone. Just slow-mo the ball and count exactly. Count the rotations.
iPhone 10 spin rate app. All right, Ben. Did you guys see the Marlins reporter who proposed a Sanchez for Real Muto trade? What are your thoughts? So, Joe Frisario, MLB.com reporter for the Marlins, said, I still think the Yankees could be very possible match for the Marlins' JT Real Muto. It could be a nice change of scenery scenario. If the Yankees offered Sanchez and, say, pitching prospect Luis Medina, that could be a starting point for the potential deal.
So we're giving up more now. Mm-hmm. So they want a younger, longer controlled, better offensive catcher from the Yankees, plus Medina, who's one of our top pitching prospects, for Realmuto.
Yep.
Sounds like
2 years
deal.
Of control for Realmuto. 27 years old. Two more controls. Control years. Sanchez only 25. Four more team control years.
Yeah.
So I think a straight up deal that Derek Jeter and the Marlins would do that.
I mean, there's no doubt the Marlins would do that. It's a deal, especially considering the guy has said he does not want to be in Florida and wants to get traded. Trade me.
You could tell this triggered a lot of Yankee fans. Finally, there was something to unite the Yankees fans on Gary Sanchez.
Yeah,
because they were split, right? A lot of Yankee fans didn't like Gary Sanchez, but you just have some outsider talk shit about Gary Sanchez, and boom, everyone's back on El Kraken's side.
Yeah, you gotta propose something that's not utterly ridiculous. You're sending a franchise type player that the Yankees. Yes, he's coming off of a bad season. Everybody knows that. Also, Brian Cashman usually doesn't sell unless your name is Sonny Gray. At that point, with this much control and as young as he is. Just stop.
I mean, Cashman already also said he's not trading Gary Sanchez.
Right. Yeah. No, they're not trading Gary Sanchez. They're certainly not trading him to the Derek Jeter led Florida Marlins for another catcher that's controlled for less years and is older. And then, oh, by the way, also, I'm going to give you one of our best pitching prospects. No.
Right.
None of this is happening.
Final question, Anthony M. Why do you think no team has repeated as champion since the 2000 Yankees? The closest we've had is the Giants, who won in 2010, 2012, and 2014. It's even hard to make it to back-to-back World Series. The Dodgers did it this year and the Rangers a few years ago.
I just think it's a long season and there is a ton of competition and it's hard to do that twice. That's I don't think there's really any like rhyme or reason. You got to have a very deep team to do that. And free agency, you know, definitely makes your roster change quite a bit, especially with the amount of moves that happen now at the trade deadlines. And there's just a lot of things that happen. It's very difficult to be your best team for as long as you, for that entire season, twice in a row with everybody coming at you. It's just very difficult to do.
I think it's a conspiracy that goes all the way to the top.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think that after watching the baseball playoffs for many, many years, you have to be lucky. You have to be good. You have to be good to get there. And you have to be good to win. But things also have to go your way. And they didn't go the Astros' way this season. And that's one of the reasons the Astros lost. The Red Sox got all the breaks. That's one of the reasons they won. I think that's just the unfortunate reality of the baseball playoffs.
Well, I mean, it's again, I think that staying healthy is a big deal as well. Because you look at what happened with... And just off the field stuff, like things that you don't think of. Look at when the Cubs won the World Series, everybody's looking at that team and like, damn, these guys are going to win, not two, not three, not four. Like they have a really good young team and now they have pitching as well. They have a team that could compete for years and they're going to be very difficult for years. And they just haven't put it together again. They've had injuries. They had a shortstop who's had off the field issues, who didn't even play in the playoffs. They've had, they went and signed Yu Darvish, and he's been in and out with injury. Like these things happen. So I think that's it's such a long season, and to keep everybody healthy and going at one thing, I think a lot of that is luck to get everybody going at the same time. But even when you're looking at a team like that has such a young nucleus, even they can't. get to even the NLCS. They couldn't get to the point before the World Series, for God's sakes. So it's I just think it's really, really hard to do, you know, for as long as the season is. I think when you're looking at some of these other pro sports and you see their seasons and they're a lot shorter, it's a little bit easier.
That's baseball, Susan.
That is baseball. You know, one thing we did skip over, one I thought I want to talk about it real quick though. Michael Brantley is an interesting player, and Josh Pazer asked. He said @Pazer_Josh, do you think the Yankees should go after Brantley? And when I saw that Brantley did not get a qualifying offer, which I thought he was going to for sure, because he had a good year, and now he's not going to cost any draft pick compensation. But now that the Yankees have gone and signed Brett Gardner, I really think that a guy like Brantley would fit this team perfectly. I mean, the type of hitter he is, he makes a lot of contact. But now the fact that they've signed Brett Gardner, and Brantley, you know, if you look at all of the projections for what he's getting, it's around $10 million for a deal. It's a two-year, three-year deal, maybe.
I think a part of that is because there's so much injury history with him.
I guess.
And he's 31.
He's 31.
And is a team going to be willing to commit 4 years to him?
I don't think it's going to take 4 years, though. I think it's a 2 to 3 year, 3 year max. But I think he even be got for 2 years. But you're right. There's an injury history there. But when you're looking at the type of player, and we're trying to fix things on the Yankees, right? We're trying to fix things and have this team be better and more of a fluid offense and a team that can hit in different situations. Like a guy like Brantley would help that.
He had a very good year.
Yeah.
I'm looking at his stats now. So he only struck out 60 times in 631 plate appearances. Left-handed hitter, hit over 300, 17 home runs. So, yeah, very good year. But, again...
Is he a switch hitter or is he just a lefty?
No, he's just a left-handed hitter. But again, like I think Brian Cashman is... I just don't think he's in the... It's not in... his way now. The new Brian Cashman is not going to commit big years, big dollars to 30-plus-year-olds. It's not going to happen.
But that's my point. I don't think he's going to take big years and big dollars. I think he's going to be a pretty reasonable contract for 2, possibly 3 years at max. But a two-year deal...
We'll see what he gets. And I think him not getting a qualifying offer means he will get more than maybe he was going to get anyway. Right, because the team will be willing to commit more to him because they don't have to give up the draft pick. So that helps Brantley. It helps these players who don't get these qualifying offers that we're going to turn them down anyway. They don't want those offers.
Right. Well, maybe unless there's another reason why they didn't want to give him that contract. But yes, it gives him more flexibility.
Because
for
the
sure.
owner is in a huge gambling debt. And because LeBron James left and he had a restaurant that tanked because it was right outside the arena in Cleveland and everyone used to go there after Cavs games. Now no one's going to Cavs games.
So no one's eating at the restaurant.
Right.
Yep. And it's infested with rats.
Yep.
And he's gotten hit by the commission, the health commission now. He's screwed.
Talking about Guy Fieri's coming in. He wants to buy the restaurant and he doesn't want to take it to Flavortown. A whole bunch of stuff.
Sell the team. Sell Kluber. Sell Carrasco. Sell them all. Don't offer any qualifying contracts.
I did have someone say after the Cleveland news came out, they said, well, can Terry Francona manage the Yankees?
Oh, man. It'll be interesting to see how badly they need money in Cleveland. You know, this could be an interesting development because they have a lot of good players.
Yeah, I think it's going to be overblown. I think this was a report that someone had some sort of inside information, and I don't see them trading Kluber or Carrasco.
We'll see. Chernoff, make the deal.
All right, any last words before we get out of here?
No, it just, you know, we're seeing how things are panning out. That's it. We're on watch, I guess. Everybody's on watch. Let's see what happens.
We're on high alert until winter meetings.
Let's go, Cashman.
Talk to you guys. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter @Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball.
Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.